Greetings, James Gunn with Azure Base Talk Radio on the BBS network. We're having some major technical difficulty as usual. Obviously, we're over the target. There's just all kinds of interference. And we're bringing Barry Littleton on the show, and we're not doing too good right now. And even connecting to us right now, there's so much ridiculous information going on. But boy, it's just one thing after another, but hopefully we can get connected here. It's probably because of the last show. I think we really ruffled some feathers, you know, on the last show. But we just might have Barry on the show. Barry, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Doesn't sound like
it. Oh, yes, Barry.
Barry.
Hey, y'all right.
Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, excellent.
All right. We're going to do your bio, and then we've already started the show, so we're just going to go through your bio and bring you on.
Okay, great.
All right, so we've got Barry Littleton, and he's a graduate in psychology, sociology, ethnic studies from Wichita State University. And Barry Littleton, as for the last two decades, has been involved in administration for at-risk youth, including cognitive behavioral modification and managing aggressive behavior. He's also an option stock trader. He has researched and practiced several aspects of the spiritual, metaphysical, and the paranormal. And he's a contactee and has all these other experiences. So we're going to bring Barry on right now. Barry, are you with us?
Yes, I'm with you. How you doing, James?
Great. Great to hear from you again.
It's great to hear you. How you doing?
Yeah.
Hey,
the first
question
I have asked is, you just did the, Black Experiencer Conference?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Yeah,
yes,
how come
yes.
They weren't invited?
That was actually pretty open to everyone. It was, strictly speaking, it was most of the presenters were melanin dominant, were ethnic. But as far as the attendees, it wasn't by any means required that all the attendees be black or ethnic, you know. But it was down in Florida that a friend of mine, Floorbird, hosted in Orlando. And it was a really nice event. It was something new. You know, she actually wanted to try to do one at his study one time. So that's something you might hear from in the future.
Well, I don't know. We did it down there, so I don't know if we want to invite them up here. Just fascinating.
Believe me, everybody was more than open. It was a real nice conference, actually. Ray Hernandez was there and a few other people, so it was nice to meet people. You know, that's the only conference I've done outside of the city, actually. So,
yeah, we're definitely going to get you back up here again. So what's new? What happened at that conference? Can you give us a little recap?
Yeah, it was basically going over. She's Fulburn that actually hosted the conference. She's been a contactee. She's been involved with the Andromedans, and the branch of Andromedans that she's dealt with are ethnic. They're black women with dreadlocks, a lot of them. So it emphasizes the feminine aspect, and also how they're of Mayan descent also. So that's something you don't hear a lot of contactees talking about. And then Sonia Barrett was there. She did a lot of things on kind of the holographic universe and some things towards personal enlightenment and personal awareness. And then Ray Hernandez had did a lot of information concerning free and a lot of statistics they got that's in the new book that they just put out. So that was a really good presentation. It just really puts people on the level of understanding that not all contact experiences are negative. So that helped a lot, and I just kind of went over my weird experiences I've had and try to just elucidate on that a little bit.
We just released the uncontrolled narrative here and put that together just to kind of counteract a lot of that. And, unfortunately, it is so censored and controlled, you know, the information concerning UFOs, and I'm sure you've been aware of that, you know, in your work as well.
Yes, very much, very much. And, you know, that's what I'm like. I'm seeing that a lot of people that are starting to come, but now that the light has been brought to this, it's starting to change, but it has to continue to change and modify. So that way, if we're going to become, you know, a type one civilization, we've all got to band together and start really dealing with the non-human intelligence factor instead of debating and sparring with each other. You know, but that's why things like MMA are so in right now. I mean, you can't, like, those places are packed with people wanting to see your violence. Yeah! You know, that's, sadly, that's, that's the vibration we're at down here. Yeah. Anyway.
Have you had much interference, Barry?
Yeah, hey, Peter Slatter is here with me as well. I forgot to mention
What's
that.
Up, Pete?
Hey, have you had much experience yourself with all this sort of stuff before? Like, I don't know whether it's Black Ops or on a negative stuff. Have you had much experience go on?
You know, as far as personal experiences with negatives, you know, no. I've not had any secret space program interactions or government men in black showing up at my doorstep. My experiences weren't like that at all. You know, everything that I went through was very positive, but the missing time and the fact that I was dealing with beings that vibration was so fast that it made the recalling, the memory, even after being there physically, kind of difficult, that was hard to deal with. And when I say that, hard to kind of go and be normal and do all the things you're supposed to do to survive here without tripping out and thinking about ships and the technology I'd seen and the beings I'd seen, because I could remember them, but I couldn't remember all of the missing time and all the information that had relayed to me and all the things I'd seen. So that was, you know, disturbing, the fragments, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely. You know, it's not easy to go from that experience into this unreal world that we live in right now. It's pretty crazy. You know, I look at the world right now as it's unfolding, and, you know, the words that Chris Gertrude, or one of those guys, said that, you know, it's not the measure for man to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. And you know, if that's what we have to be, you know, to be accepted, if we have to be a part of that, then I think we need to reevaluate, you know, like insanity. I think if they call us insane, I'd say, yeah, we are insane. We're insanity, and the rest of the world's not.
You know, it's I people get upset sometimes when I refer to this being a prison planet to a degree. And I know people don't like that, you know, but yeah. I mean, we have to look at what the town of souls that incarnate here. We've got an angelic factor. We've got those that are on the love frequency, the power of one frequency, but we've also got the others that are incapable of feeling. And we've all met these individuals like this. It's like they don't even know how to love. It's a trip, you know, but that's the kind of souls that seem to be able to freely incarnate here and cause destruction and do. Sorry. Back to the lighthearted stuff.
Yeah, they all need to get soul cards. If you don't have a soul card, then you're ejected into the fourth dimension or something.
Can we kind of take this to a different level? You know, I think.
Oh yeah, take whatever you want.
I spent a great deal of time at this point in my life. Okay, I'm not a young cat. Okay, but I'm not an old man either. I'm right in the midlife there. But I thought at this point in my life, I was done with the physical experiences and having these wild things that just completely stopped my perception and stopped my world. I thought I was done with that after I survived the traumatic brain injuries and the near-death experience. I thought I was done. And then I go out to that ranch out there and just, as my brother would say, you're out there freaking out. Oh, yeah, I was freaking out. I mean, so many things happened out there. And I have a certain theory that I think is somewhat true. Something that the first time I was out there, witnessing this, anybody who's followed what happened out there, the holographic mountain, okay, that was almost more than I could take. And then
I'm
sorry. What's that?
We're talking about this tonight, actually, and it's funny because I was there when you had that experience, but I didn't hear about it till like early in the morning, the next or probably a few hours after it happened.
Yeah,
that you know that just the witnessing of that, and it's one thing I could sit on here and I've read about the holographic principle. I know a little about holographic technology, and it's one thing to sit and talk about that. But it is another thing to experience it in the way I did. It was mind-blowing to the fact that it, like, dehydrated me. After that experience, my lips were all chapped like I'd walked across the Sahara Desert, you know.
But, do you want to describe what happened, Barry, for the listeners?
Yeah, why don't you describe what happened there? That's just so the listeners can understand what you're talking about.
Okay, it was the first time I was out there, getting late. I don't sleep well at night, and there was a gentleman by the name of Albert that worked out there, and we were walking around the property a little bit. It's probably maybe 1:30 in the morning, something like that. We go to what's the Pleiadian Circle there, and we're just talking there. We pull out some chairs, sitting there rapping, and all of a sudden I noticed that there's a star. At first I thought it was either Venus or maybe Jupiter. It's by this tree, and it starts moving. And then finally, Albert caught. He said, "You seeing that star right there?" I said, "Yeah, I'm watching it move." And it starts moving more, and it morphs. It turns into what appears to be like five individual stars, and then it morphs back, and it goes vertical as well, and it goes back to one. And it moves over to a different, over what's called it's Sleeping Lady, right? The Mount Rings next to Mount Adams right there. It's called Sleeping Lady. Sleeping Beauty. Yeah, it starts descending towards what's called was it Flathead Mountain, the main peak there. It starts going down.
Yeah,
and as it goes down, first of all, poor Albert's over there. He's like nearly hyperventilating after seeing this thing. And at this time, though, I'm not saying anything, okay, because I didn't want to influence what he might be seeing, because I'm already kind of tripping out. But as this thing goes down behind Flat Mountain, it goes out. Then all of a sudden, a few seconds later, it re-illuminates. And when I say this, at first I thought to myself, okay, this thing, it descended in front of the mountain, and my visual acuity is off, and it's powered back up now, and I can see it. But I could distinctively see this ship and this light through the mountain. And then when I start thinking that I must just be, my visual acuity is off. It comes up, it goes out, it comes up, it goes out above the tree line again, and goes back down and does it again. It does it like twice. And at this time, poor Albert's over there like he's a football player huddling, hyperventilating. And finally I asked him, I said, "What are you seeing?" And he starts saying, it's impossible. So never mind that, what are you seeing? And he told me, he goes, "It's impossible, I'm seeing through the mountain. Like this is some type of a hologram." And when it comes back up the third time, it goes back down. It gets, a little bit lower than midway through the mountain. So it goes out. I can't see it anymore. But that was profound. And something I'll mention, that when it was coming back up towards the top of Flathead Mountain there, it was generating what appeared to be a type of a mist around it. And you can see the mist also starting to envelop the top of the mountain there, or the top of the that peak anyway. So that's just something that's the first thing to happen out there that really, I mean, that on top of the Sasquatch activity, that really blew me away. And it took me a long time to process and get done with that.
you're not alone there, because we had a Triple PhD Boeing engineer and a Skunk Works Lockheed guy here. And they saw the same thing. They saw one come from behind the mountain, came right up to him. I think it had 7 points of light on it. And it was huge. And it came right over the house, and then it stopped. And then it went, you know, some people kind of freaked out. And then so it stopped and it went back towards the mountain again, which I thought was interesting. But you're not alone. Now, I know you saw some other things. You saw quite a few, like, treetop level large light ships, you know, coming through that weekend as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the first night I was out there, I was, it's late once again, I thought in the Field of Dreams, and some ships started coming above the treetops. And I'll tell you, it's one thing to ring some bowls, crystal bowls, and go out and look for ships and stuff. But I'll tell you, throughout my life, it's a whole nother thing when they get too close. And when they come in too close, and then you start missing time. That's exactly what happened to me out there the first night I was there. I, outside of feeling like I'm being watched everywhere I go out there, okay, I'm missing time for about 30 minutes of watching these crab at what is right around 3 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock, it gets very active at Mount Adams. I'll say that.
Yeah, that's when we pass out the Kool-Aid. No, I'm just kidding. There's so much going on here that the energy is off the scale. And what's really nice about ESETI is that there's so many other people that come and talk about these experiences and you know, share with each other. And there's so many people having the same experiences, but they just don't have anybody to talk to about it and to share with. And then, you know, people come to East Bay to find out they're not crazy, but they pretty much live in a crazy world.
Well, you know, I mean, the first time I was there, and I thought somebody was playing a joke on me at first. The rock in front of my doorstep and the weird things that started happening, the broken trees behind the urn. And I mean, and not just that,
yeah.
Before I went the first time, I was a little bit nervous going anyway, but I've never been to that part of the United States. But I kept obsessively wanting to watch these videos and things about albino Sasquatch and white Sasquatch. Mm-hmm. I was with my brother one night, and I was watching these videos again and again. He's like, man, you're kind of tripping out. And I know now that I was being communicated with before I even got there. So I think there's a lot
to be said. Before I came back over.
What's that, Pete?
You're telling me the same thing before I came back over recently. Remember, we were talking before I came over here probably 3 months ago. We were talking for a couple of hours, and the same thing happened to me. I was getting telepathic communication before I even got here with the Sasquatch.
Pete, I didn't recognize it as that at first. It was just this weird obsession to watch these videos. You know what I mean? It was very odd. And it had no, but I didn't recognize it as even telethought communication at first. But I will say this, after being out there, and now I take it much more serious with the individuals that say when they get mind speak from the Sasquatch, I got mind speak from the elder out there. And it was after I had just asked him not to step out. Because I'm sorry, bottom line is where I live in the Midwest, and I could sit here now and try to act like I'm some guru. Ooh, I'll go out there and I'll meditate in the forest out there. Yeah, right. And I would have a contact right up. But if something steps out of the forest on me and it's 12 feet tall, because this individual would have been at least 11 feet, at least, taller than 7 or 8 or 9, and that would just be a little hard to take at first. So I said it, and I can't sleep at night, so I'm walking around, and it's half dark out there. That time of night, I'm walking down there, and I said, look, I just turned the light off. I said I want to have an encounter. I do, but if you come out of the woods on me, I can't take it, so don't do it. And then I said it telepathically, and I said it straight verbally. I turned off that flashlight. I said it verbally, yo. So then I went down into that cabin. I sit down on the bed, thinking like, okay, I'm trying to get some rest, and then that's when the telethought came through. And when I say this was... I know advanced telepathy, and this telepathy was overwhelming to a degree. It came with some words came through, so there was English as well as telethought pictures. You know, and when that individual was done communicating with me, they shut off the channel, and I couldn't get it started again. So not just was this individual, and you know, I had just done a video over invisibility techniques, and I found when I got out there, I've got somebody practicing that on me, so I'm getting outwitted, and he's creeping on me. He telepathically overwhelmed me, okay, and I've only felt that power of telepathy when I've been in the presence of certain star beings. So, and I can't accept what a lot of the researchers are saying right now, that they're all animals. They say they're four types, and that they're all animal-like. You know, this one was that was that felt like a shaman. That was no animal that was communicating with me by any stretch. That was something very advanced. And James, I was going to ask you, how old do you think that the elders get to be? You told me once.
Oh, the Bigfoot elders?
Yeah.
God, you know, I'm not sure. I think we asked them once and got that information. I know they live pretty long time, 500 plus years, I think, if they want to. There's an elder here, and he is gray or white-haired, and sometimes he'll have two apprentices with him, and he'll show up. And then we have Dlaki, the juvenile that's running around freaking everybody out that people are seeing on a regular
basis. Yeah, I saw him a few weeks ago.
Yeah. And he appeared to Clyde Lewis and several other people that were here. So we actually have his footprints now. We have plaster casts and photographs of his footprints. But that's kind of an ongoing situation. But what I've noticed about these beings, the ones coming here, is that they are very, very advanced beings. They're extreme sensitivity. They're very telepathic. They're very connected. The Native Americans have a saying here: if you go out to find Bigfoot, you'll never find Bigfoot. But if Bigfoot wants to, he'll find you. And that's basically the way it is. We are so noisy and loud, and there's so much psychic disturbance coming off of us. And when we go into the forest, I mean, they know we're coming a mile away, or probably 10 miles away. So they probably know we're going to come before we even decide to come. So I don't know, but they're amazing beings. And I know the researchers up here, the scientists that are up here, and a psychologist as well, they're trying to put them into this, you know, I think it was Gigantus pithecus or something like that, some giant ape, you know, that it's just a giant ape running around in the forest. But, you know, the problem is that they have put every gear you can think of, you know, like infrared sensors, everything you can imagine they've got out there. And they'll put fruit out, like bananas and apples and things like that, and cucumbers for them. And every time they come and they get the fruit and walk off with it, and they have nothing. So they totally outsmarted the scientists with their best gear out there. And they've come up, you know, they even have infrared stuff, thermal things and stuff too. But every time they've totally outsmarted the scientists. So I don't know how that fits into this big dumb ape theory, because if it does fit into that, their consciousness is below the big dumb ape, you know, so their intelligence is below that, because he does outsmart him on every level. So I don't know. I think we need to let go of that and start, you know, looking at something that matches, you know, the experiences.
Looking back at your experiences too, Barry, is there anything you look back in hindsight now with the Bigfoot encounters specifically, in terms of, I don't know, does anything come to mind that you didn't pick up at the time, but now you see that, you know, how can I pick that up in terms of communication or, you know, anything surrounding those experiences?
Oh, yeah, big time. You know, when I went out there the second time, I had the pleasure of being invited out there, and I requested to stay in the same yard, just, you know, because I was trying to figure out what's going on. And I spent some time, actually, I even did a regression before I came the second time. I didn't tell anyone about, because I wanted to know what my super consciousness had seen and recorded during these events out there. All right. But the second time I went, I was going for dinner, like the second night, and I was standing in line, and there's this Caucasian gentleman standing next to me, real outgoing. And finally, his name was Tom Powell. And he starts going, well, you know, really, I'm not the UFO guy. I'm the Bigfoot guy. And I said, oh, really? And we got to talking. And we talked for hours. And his information was absolutely stellar, okay? Things I'd never heard. But one thing he does is I tell him about the encounter I had the year before with this rock. This basalt rock that was set in front of my doorstep, and how weird everything was. And he makes a face out of a leaf and tells me, he said, you got to remember, you're dealing with the beings that can, they observe every minuscule of their environment. And sometimes they will change things to see if you have enough heightened awareness to pick up on it. So he makes this leaf in this face and leaf, and tells me, why don't you put that where that rock was last year and tell me if something happens. And then, you know, we talked a little bit more, and then I didn't see him anymore, but I put this leaf out there. And, you know, the thing just sat there for like 3 days, and nothing happened. I mean, this wasn't messed with or anything, and I finally crumpled it up and let it blow away. Then the conference ends, and the day after the conference, I go down, and there's a red lava rock on my doorstep. And I tell you, I was pretty sure that there weren't many people left out there then. I suspected everyone. I said, somebody's trying to make a fool out of me. And they're putting rocks on my doorstep. This is the person. And James, you probably remember that because I came up and I basically, I hate to say this, but I kind of interrogated everybody that was left out there, trying to see if they were playing a joke on me.
Yeah.
And you were planting trees that day. And I came to us and I said, when you were down there, did you sneak a rock on my doorstep? and he kind of laughed a little, and I figured out that you didn't do it. But then I said, when I was walking up, I said, well, someone's down there effing with me, you know. I said, but it's a person. It's a human down there messing with me. And when I walked a few steps away, you go, how do you know? And, man, that made me feel weird. Right there, that's when stuff started getting weird. And I almost got off that ranch without having anything that stopped my perception like the first time I was out there. And then I was literally cruising for a bruising right there. you know, when I go back down, not long after I talked to you, James, I go back down there. I was going to get my computer. And I know where everyone was, so no one had anything to do with this. And there are these weird little rock structures around the urn. I mean, they were so little, I almost wouldn't have caught them if I wasn't obsessed with looking at my environment anyway. But there are these little signs. And then I find in the back of the urn, there's this very odd quail feather, a quail feather with these white spots on it. And it's the way it's sitting there, and that's when I have this experience with this squirrel that comes from those trees way up there and is singing some type of a melody. It's making this sound. And between that and earlier at this same week, like sometimes some of us would go over to Hood River right there is another bridge just outside of the property. You can watch the river go rushing by. It's kind of cool. But outside around there, we were hearing owl sounds and cow sounds, and there were humanoids out there mimicking sounds. And several times, I do believe, I find that the Bigfoot researchers or the experiencers say something they call zapping, which they say is being hit by infrasound by Sasquatch. And I do believe that that is very much real. And being the second time I was out there hearing them yell between mountain ranges like that, I think that needs to be examined a lot. Because the second time, one night we're walking back over there and we hear this owl sound, and poor Albert like jumps almost off the bridge and goes, man, that made the chakras in my back feel funny. And I would start shining a light over there because the truth is, it made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. The first time we heard this owl, it sounded like a gray orange owl. It was so loud right behind us, and we tried to kind of ignore it. Oh, it's loud, yeah. And then maybe a minute later, it goes again, but it was distorted. It sounded like it was purposely being distorted. And that's when he jumped and made the back of my neck stand up. I had a flashlight, and I started shining the flashlight back there because the back 40 back there. But you can't see nothing but a bunch of trees. And then a rock comes flying down and almost hits the Yosemite Gate. Maybe about 25 feet from where I was. And I swear to you, it came from the treetops. Yeah. That's all I'll say.
Well, they do mimic owls. Yeah, they do mimic other animals. The owl's one of their favorites. And they do a lot of that. And we've seen them. They do a lot of whooping. They go whoop, whoop. You hear that out there. And they'll knock on trees and things like that. But every once in a while, they'll howl. And they'll do this. It's howl, and it is infrasound, and it goes right through you, and all the hair on your arms and back and neck stand up, and you just go, what the heck is that? And we had two brothers here that were twin brothers, I believe, and they were parked down, and that was their goal, to have an experience. And when they showed up, and when the Bigfoot showed up, the same thing, they just freaked out, and it turned them upside down. And they said the energy exchange that happened was so overwhelming they were still shook up the next morning when I saw them. They said, I'm still shaken from it. It just said something happened. It was, they said, I knew I was out of my league. You know, and these are big guys, you know. And they said, he goes, I knew I was out of my league when I connected with this being. And I really wanted to connect with him and talk with him and everything. But I knew when I did, it was like I was out of my league, that this was an extremely powerful being.
Yeah. You know, that you know, something else that that Tom had said, and it resonated a lot, and he had mentioned, he said, well, you know, they live in trees. And I was like, well, what do you mean, like a hut kind of thing, or in the base of trees, or as arboreals? And he says, no. He says, but people don't want to talk about this, but that they can symbiotically merge themselves with trees. And, you know, that one really definitely resonated. And when you start talking about cloaking abilities and things like that, it changes everything. And, you know, and James, I did that video on, and Pete, you saw it too, it was over just chanting. And, you know, I wasn't even going to talk about that because I can't prove anything, but I was hearing that only between 3 and 4 a.m. when I go down to that urine down there, closer to 4, maybe I would hear this chanting. And at first I thought I was just picking up maybe echoes from the land, the Native American elders that were there formerly. And because clairaudience isn't my best gift, you know. But then I get in the cabin, I would still hear it. And it was so subtle that you almost think you're making it up. And first it would sound like some type of a Native American chant, and then it would turn into like what Gregorian chant. It sounded like a type of Gregorian chant. So it was like three tone. And, you know, and then I find out later, Tom calls me one day just out of the blue, and he says, you know, you should check this person out, and Bob Coon, and what he says about that chanting. I don't know why he even mentioned that. And I'm finding that they've recorded that in places like Mississippi and in Texas, but only near human habitations. And they've never actually caught it out in the forest, but near human habitations they've heard it. And that crypto-linguistic guy, Scott Nelson, said that it sounds like he hears a type of Cherokee in there. And they think that maybe, perhaps, it's a protective prayer. So my question is, are they saying a prayer for me or for them? Or is it for them or us? You know, I don't know.
Maybe that's their dinner song. You call every dinner and you're on the
to serve man, huh?
I've heard from other people now. I haven't heard this myself, but I've heard that they do chanting sometimes, that the Bigfoot actually do kind of chantings and singing, and it's in some other language that people don't understand or recognize. And so I have heard stories about that. I haven't heard it myself, though.
Oh, wow. You know, I find it fascinating because they're definitely very, very present out there. And I think that as far as Mount Adams itself, I think on top of everything else it is, I honestly believe that there is also a device inside that mountain that is left over from Earth was still a type 1, type 2 civilization. And I believe what it does is to trigger consciousness and keep humanity evolving. The people that are within a certain field of energy out there. And I think what it does is I think it produces orbs, orb technology, real orb technology. Because you see orbs out there all the time. You just take a picture, you're probably going to get some of them. And people need to understand when dealing with the quantum hologram of consciousness and things like that, one of these orbs, even microscopic, can get in our field of awareness and alter our perception. So that, you know, so that left me figuring out, like, how much of what I was seeing was projections and things like that, and how much of it was maybe one of these orbs altering my perception. But nevertheless, reality is real to the perceiver, so it doesn't matter. But it keeps elevating your consciousness. And I did an interview with Jimmy Church a couple weeks ago, and he'd just come from out there, and he said some very interesting things, you know. And I mentioned maybe there's another one of these devices in something like Mount Shasta. And he said, I've been to Mount Shasta. It's a real good experience. But he said, Barry, it's not like Yosemite. He said, Yosemite is a whole other level. And I said, wow, that's pretty cool. You know.
Yeah. Yeah, we've had some remote viewers here, John Vivanco, and very excellent remote viewer. And we did a couple classes here, and one of the things they did is they did remote view the mountain. And what's funny is they totally validated what you just said. There is a device in there. It's very ancient. It has to do with crystals and copper and other windings and things like that. It's generating an enormous amount of energy. It's almost like pumping out fifth dimensional energy. And it's also has been measured by Harold Oldfield's work. And they actually filmed the mountain PIP technology, and you can see massive bands of energy coming off that mountain and going out. And John also looked up these government charts about magnetic anomalies. And this whole ranch, this whole area is right smack in the middle of an extreme magnetic anomaly. These have been actually charted out by the government. So all those things that you're talking about are being validated by, you know, the remote viewers and, you know, the government as well, the charts that most people don't know where to look or to find this information.
You know, the first night I was out there, the last time, the very first night, somebody had some good binoculars. And I was looking at what everybody says is dimensional door. And these weren't even infrared. They were just the regular binoculars. But I'm looking at that dimensional door, and to just the left of it is this, it almost looks like a pyramid in the ice during the day. But I could distinctively see what looked like, man, it looked like disco lights under the ice right there. And I mean, I watched these things glittering around under there, like almost the way the 70s used to illustrate the computers looking, the processors would kind of be like that. It looked like that, or like a strobe light or something under the ice. And I start to the point to where I start asking people around me, okay, tell me when nobody's shining lasers over there. Okay, nobody's shining, no lasers. I observed this thing for 30 minutes. I passed it to several people, said, look at this. And it looked like a processor. That's the only way I can describe it. And that was the first thing that I kind of noticed that first night out there. So, one of the things that we had to do that I was rather nervous to do was we had to each do a quote-unquote a sky watch. And I'll tell you, honestly, I had never done one before. And number two, it was a little nervous because I'm like, man, isn't that how they judge if you're a real contactee now? If you don't get any ships to show up, aren't you like a flake? Anyway. So when I do this, and it's nothing going to show up, right. Oh, no. So, but one thing I wanted to do is I had everybody do a pineal gland exercise. And it looks a bit ridiculous, but it's by far the best pineal gland exercise I've ever done. And when we did this afterwards or during and just after, a lot of people, because you've got a lot of natural psychics in the audience and in the attendees, it's great. But so many of them started saying, I mean, over 10 people, I'm seeing a grid. I'm seeing some type of a grid. And I started immediately kind of connecting this with, is this grid they're seeing, is this the grid that's being put out by this device inside that mountain? You know, and I think that device actually reads our soul life memories to a certain degree. To where I can tell you, I have never seen a cat being, all right? I've dealt with a feline type of energy, but it was not corporeal. It wasn't, you know, I can't say it was for sure a feline, that it felt a feline type of energy. But when I did my regression, I wanted to know what was on the ship that came too close that caused me to lose like 30 minutes out in that field just watching these ships coming in a little too close. And when I go to the regression, I see on board this craft, because a lot of times we're being bilocated, if we're aware of it or not, with the technologies they're using. I'm witnessing what looked like about a 7 or 8 foot tall bobcat. And I never in my life have seen anything like that. And it started making me wonder. I was like, man, is this device I haven't seen a feline being, so it's like, here you go. It makes you kind of wonder, doesn't it?
It's funny, we're sitting here talking about this, and right now this cat walked up and it's sitting next to me while we're talking about the feline beings, which is kind of interesting. But also in the remote viewing, that's what John Vivanco's group got. They kept seeing these feline beings that were coming in these Merkaba ships, multiple ones landing on the mountain and interacting with people. And they couldn't figure it out. They said, all of our viewers are seeing these cat-like beings, humanoid cat beings, and they couldn't figure it out. And then he came and talked to me about it. I go, yeah, those are the felines, you know, those are the Nrsringa, the Peshat, or, you know, they used to call them Sekhmet. You know, there's all kinds of different groups that are feline in nature, and they were the protectors of the gods in ancient history. And Nrsha, things like that, you can look it up, and there are statues and stories and everything about these beings. And they're actually back now, and they're here to help us with this huge shift that we're going through.
You know, I have no doubt. You know, I'll say real quick. I tried hard to tune in to what I saw when I saw this ship morphing on the Holographic Mountain incident. I tried hard to tune into that ship, both telepathically and every other way, and it seemed like I couldn't. So I was curious, what still did I get? Information that I get, what did I see subconsciously? So when I go through this regression and ask my superconscious what this was, what the regressionist does, you know, I started describing things. Now I did remember flashes of them, but one thing is beings that look like white cactuses, and another being that was a pilot on board that craft that looked like an, I think, kind of like maybe an iguanodon, or more like a cross between like an iguanodon and a rhinoceros or something. Very odd being. But I saw a symbol on this uniform. And, you know, I got to tell you, I knew I'd seen this symbol on a car before. And it's the, I want to say it was a, that guy Larkin O'Toole was driving one of those cars. It's a Prius. The emblem of the Prius. I've never seen a symbol on any of these beings before. Just food for thought, if nothing else, you know.
Yeah. Well, you know, when we did the remote viewing here, when you know, when they do the remote viewing, they just give you a number. They don't give you anything else, and they have the information in an envelope or whatever. And so just from that number, you know, I end up drawing a ship. I drew the mountain and the opens to the mountain area, you know, in the remote viewing. And then what was weird is next thing I'm standing there looking at this guy, and he's dressed in a dark suit. It's not a suit I've seen before. You know, it's futuristic. And he's got bars on his collar, like two bars on each side, which to me represents some kind of position, you know, like captain or something like that. That's the only thing I can relate it to. And then I find out he was the guy on the ship. We got his name and everything else, and we're working with him later. But it's kind of interesting how this information comes, and we do know what's happening on these other levels. We just have to learn how to pull it back in and remember. Sounds like one of your techniques you connect with your superconscious is probably similar to like remote viewing or getting that information.
Now, I'm curious, because I'll tell you, one thing I got to look at also was that mountain range that they call Sleeping Lady, Sleeping Beauty there. And I'm curious, did anyone remote view that? Because I saw something there. And
didn't. That'd be a good topic. That'd be another one to look at, and even remote view Flat Top, because Flat Top, there's some weird stuff happening on that other mountain, because when you drive up there, a lot of times you'll be met with these guys in camos, you know, and they'll say, what are you doing here, and things like that, and it's kind of interesting. You go, what are these guys doing there? And then all of a sudden, all of these giant dishes showed up on top of Flat Top, which some of them weren't there before, and there's new dishes. And unfortunately, one of them is aimed at us, but God knows what they're doing with that dish. But anyway, Yeah, there's some strange stuff going on up there at Flat Top. I'd like to find out what's happening there.
Well, I think there's a city inside of that mountain range. I think there's a city within that complex there, and I think that it's like a crystalline type of structure. And what I was getting a lot was that these beings are saying that for beings like us, even our negative emotions can shatter things within the city. So I think that's a heavy concept. And what I saw looked a lot like what they call the crystalline ballroom. It's a cave. The chandelier and ballroom. It looks a lot like that. I don't know. It's just, you know, like I said, food for thought. But I'd love to see if that's targeted. What came out of that? What people saw.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. We'll have to remote view that. I know the Native Americans talk about a crystalline city and how there's some extremely advanced beings that live in there, and they used to take their wounded and their sick up there, you know, on a regular basis. And then they had to close off communication because humanity got very, you know, aggressive and their technology was advancing, you know, beyond their spirituality. So they had to break off communication. But I think that's going to open up again when we're ready to reunite. Hey, Barry, unfortunately, we're out of time here, so we got to sign off. But what's the best way that people can get in touch with you?
You can go to barrylittleton.com. On there, there's an email that I just got straightened out, thank goodness. You can reach me on email there, and it's also a link to my YouTube channel as well on there. There's a lot of information on my YouTube channel. So.
Awesome.
Good to hear from you, Mike.
Hey, good to talk to you again.
Yeah, so hey, it was awesome reconnecting, and we'll definitely do it again here real soon, and definitely get you out here again for the next conference.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you both. Thank you for having me on, and it's a pleasure to catch back up with you.
All right. Unfortunately, we're out of time, folks. This is James Gunn with As You Wish Talk Radio on the BBS Network, signing off. Have a great evening. You know, keep an open mind, a loving heart, and pure intent. And try to operate under universal law and see what happens. You know, we can turn this planet around. Anyway, have a great evening. Good night.